It's 2018, and if you're not listening to Totally Driven Radio,
you have failed this city.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Bareback Facts, and I am your host, Dallas Duclo, and as always, I want to welcome every single one of you to the show. If you're new, then you're in for a treat, and if you're a long-time listener, you're still in for a treat, because now we're doing a different set of segments here for the Bareback Facts. We're doing the women of history who have made very, very significant marks in altering the course of human history. And today we're going to be starting with perhaps one of the most influential, one of the most accomplished women in human history, and that's Marie Curie. Now, for those of you who are new, you might not know this, but we do have a call-in number. It's 718-508-9883. So if you want to call in and talk a little bit, it's always welcome. You can also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Totally Driven Entertainment is everywhere. Now, with that being said, let's get right into it. I want to start off by giving you a little bit of background into Marie Curie, as you know, where she was born and how she rose to her great accomplishments. So, without further ado, let's get right into it. Now, Marie Curie was born Maria Slodowski, and she was born in Warsaw on November 7th in 1867. She was the daughter of a secondary school teacher, and she received general education in local schools and some scientific training from her father. Now, before we continue, I want to point out that she was a Polish and naturalized French physicist and chemist who conducted pioneering research on radioactivity. She was the first woman to win a Nobel Prize, the first person and only woman twice, and the only person to win a Nobel Prize in two different sciences. And she was part of the Curie family legacy of five Nobel Prizes. So she almost accounted for half of her entire family's Nobel Prizes by herself. And to say nothing of the fact that she was part of a family legacy of success. She was also the first woman to become a professor at the University of Paris, and in 1995 became the first woman to be entombed on her own merits in the Pantheon in Paris. And if you don't know what that is, it's a tremendous honor. The Pantheon is a building in the Latin Quarter in Paris, France, and it was originally built as a church dedicated to Saint Genevieve and to house the reliquary chassis containing her relics. But after many changes, it now functions as a secular mausoleum containing the remains of distinguished French citizens. So this is a tremendous honor to have been picked to be entombed in the Pantheon in Paris. As I mentioned, she was born in 1867 in Warsaw, in what was at the time the Kingdom of Poland, but part of the Russian Empire. She studied at Warsaw's clandestine flying university and began her practical scientific training in Warsaw. Now, at the age of 24, she would follow her older sister Bronislawa to Paris, where she earned her higher degrees and conducted her subsequent scientific work. And there she shared the 1903 Nobel Peace Prize in physics with her husband, Pierre Curie, and with physicist Henri Becquerel. She then later won a Nobel Prize in 1911 in chemistry. Now, she comes from a background that is pretty humble. Again, born in Warsaw, the fifth and youngest child of well-known teachers Bronislawa Nie-Boguska and Vladislaw Stolodowski. The elder siblings of Maria, nicknamed Mania, were Zofia, who was born in 1862, Joseph, born in 1863, and Bronislawa, born in 1865, as well as Helena, born in 1866. On both paternal and maternal sides, the family had lost their property and fortunes through patriotic involvements in Polish national uprisings aimed at restoring Poland's independence. And the most recent of those had been the January uprising of 1863 and 1865. Condemned, the subsequent generation, including Maria and her elder siblings, to a difficult struggle to get ahead in life. Because of her parents' political choices, she had to really, really work hard to get people to look past her family legacy. And really, they were left with nothing. Her family had been fairly wealthy, but it squandered her and her siblings' inheritance on failed rebellion attempts. Now, her grandfather, Joseph Slawodowski, had been a respected teacher in Lublin, where he had taught the young Polslaw Prus, and who would become a leading figure in Polish literature. Władysław Sklodowski taught mathematics and physics, subjects that Maria was later to pursue, and was also director of the two Warsaw Gymnasia for Boys. After Russian authorities eliminated laboratory instruction from the Polish schools, he brought much of the laboratory equipment home and instructed his children in its use. He would eventually be fired by his Russian supervisors for pro-Polish sentiments and forced to take lower-paying posts. The family also lost money on a bad investment and eventually chose to supplement their income by lodging boys in the house. Maria's mother, Bronisława, operated a prestigious Warsaw boarding school for girls and would resign from the position after Maria was born. She would later also die of tuberculosis in May of 1878 when Maria was only 10 years old. Less than 3 years earlier, her oldest sibling, Zofia, had died of typhus contracted from a boarder. So her parents had been having boarders in the house, people that were basically paying to stay with them to supplement their low income. And one of them had been carrying typhus, which infected Maria's oldest sibling, Zofia, and she died. So a little bit of a tragic childhood experience for Maria. Her father was an atheist and her mother a devout Catholic. So you can imagine that was a very interesting discussion there. The deaths of her mother and sister caused Maria, however, to give up Catholicism and become agnostic. When she was 10 years old, she began attending the boarding school of J. Sikorska. Next, she would attend a gymnasium for girls, from which she graduated on the 12th of June in 1863 with a gold medal. After a collapse, possibly due to depression, she spent the following year in the countryside with relatives of her father and the next year with her father in Warsaw, where she did some tutoring. Unable to enroll in a regular institution of higher education because she was a woman, she and her sister Bronisława became involved with the clandestine flying university, sometimes translated as floating university, although incorrectly, a Polish patriotic institution of higher learning that actually did admit women students. Now, Maria made an agreement with her sister, Bronisława, that she would give her financial assistance during Bronisława's medical studies in Paris in exchange for similar assistance 2 years later. Now, in connection with this, Maria took a position as a governess, first as a home tutor in Warsaw, then for 2 years as a governess in Suzuki, with a landed family, the Zawoskis, who were relatives of her father. Now, while working for the latter family, she fell in love with their son, Kazimierz Zawoski, a future eminent mathematician. However, his parents rejected the idea of his marrying the penniless relative, and Kazimierz was unable to oppose them. Maria's loss of the relationship with Zawoski was both of them. He soon earned a doctorate and pursued an academic career as a mathematician, becoming a professor and rector of Krakow University. Still as an old man and a mathematics professor at the Warsaw Polytechnic, he would sit contemplatively before the statue of Maria, which had been erected in 1935 before the Radium Institute that she had founded in 1932. At the beginning of 1890, Bronislawa, who a few months earlier had married Kamierz Dulewski, a Polish physician and social as well as political activist, invited Maria to join them in Paris. Maria declined, however, because she could not afford the university tuition. It would take her a year and a half longer to gather the necessary funds. She was helped by her father, who was then able to secure a more lucrative position again at this time. All that time, she continued to educate herself by reading books, exchanging letters, and being tutored herself, all while working. In 1889, she returned home to her father in Warsaw, and she continued working as a governess and remained there until 1891. She tutored and studied at the Flying University and began her practical scientific training starting in 1890 and well into 1891 in a chemical laboratory at the Museum of Industry and Agriculture at Krakowski Przemysłowy 66 near Warsaw's Old Town. The laboratory was run by her cousin Józef Boguski, who had been an assistant in St. Petersburg to the Russian chemist Dmitry Mendeleev. Now, following her studies in 1890 and in the year 1891, Sklodowski went to Paris and, now using the name Marie, began to follow the lectures of Paul Appel, Gabriel Lippmann, and Edmund Baudy at the Sorbonne. There she met physicists who were already well known, Jean Perrin, Charles Marin, and Amy Cotton. And at this time, she worked far into the night in her student quarters, Garrett, and virtually lived on bread and butter and tea. She came first in the license of physical sciences in 1893, and she began to work in Lippmann's research laboratory. And in 1894, was placed second in the license of mathematical sciences. It was in the spring of that year that she met Pierre Curie. So at this point, she's made it on the sweat of her own brow to Paris, been involved with some of the premier scholars in her field, and she's doing it all on her own. And then she meets Pierre Curie. Now, they would meet and later be married on July 25th of 1895, and it marked the start of a partnership that was soon to achieve results of world significance, in particular the discovery of polonium, so-called by Marie in honor of her native land, in the summer of 1898, and that of radium a few months later. Now, following Henri Becquerel's discovery in 1896 of a new phenomenon which later she called radioactivity, Marie Curie, looking for a subject for a thesis, decided to find out if the property discovered in uranium was to be found in other matter, and she discovered that this was true for thorium at the same time as G.C. Schmidt did. Now, what do we know about polonium and radium? Because this is going to come into play later. Polonium is a radioactive silvery gray or black metallic element of the oxygen group. Now, it's the first element to be discovered by radiochemical analysis, and it was discovered in 1898 by Pierre and Marie Curie, who were investigating the radioactivity of a certain pitch blend of uranium ore. Now, the very intense radioactivity not attributable to uranium was ascribed to a new element named by them after Marie Curie's homeland, Poland, as I mentioned before, and it was announced in July of 1898. It's an extremely rare element, even in pitch blend. A thousand tons of the ore must be processed to obtain 40 milligrams of polonium. Its abundance in the Earth's crust is about 1 part in 10 to the 15th power. It occurs in nature as a radioactive decay, product of uranium, thorium, and acetinium. The half-lives of its isotopes range from a fraction of a second up to 103 years, and the most common natural isotope of polonium, polonium-210, has a half-life of 138.4 days. So this is an incredibly rare find. This is incredibly significant. For those of you who didn't understand a little bit of the scientific jargon, essentially, what it boils down to is she basically, with the combined efforts of herself, one of the rarest elements, one of the rarest radioactive elements on the planet. And it was through the combined experiments of herself and her husband that they were able to do this. So this is a very impressive achievement. And then radium, which they discovered a few months later, is another element. It's the heaviest of the alkaline earth metals of group 2A of the periodic table. It's a silvery white metal that does not occur free in nature. It is a chemical element. And again, it was discovered in the same year that they discovered polonium. Now, it was discovered in 1898 by Pierre and Marie Curie and an assistant by G. Beaumont after Marie observed that the radioactivity of pitchblende was 4 or 5 times greater than that of uranium. It contained of the uranium it contained and was not fully explained on the basis of radioactive polonium, which she had just discovered in pitchblende residues. The new powerfully radioactive substance could be concentrated with barium, but because its chloride was slightly more insoluble, it could be precipitated by fractional crystallization. The separation was followed by the increase in intensity of new lines in the ultraviolet spectrum and by a steady increase in the apparent atomic weight of the material until a value was obtained. Now, through various experiments, they were able to isolate this. But since all isotopes of radium are radioactive and short-lived on the geological timescale, any primeval radium would have disappeared long ago. Therefore, radium occurs naturally only as a disintegration product in the three natural radioactive decay series, thorium, uranium, and actinium series. Radium-226 is a member of the uranium decay series. Its parent is thorium-230, and its daughter is radon-222. So, essentially, radium is a byproduct of uranium, and it does not occur naturally. It rather occurs when these things are being broken down due to radioactive decay. Now, this does bear in mind this is very significant in terms of Marie Curie's research, because these, not only is Mary and her husband Pierre, not only do they make a massive discovery, their discovery opens the way for scientists to try and gain an understanding of radioactivity and try and harness elements that give off radioactive waves. And basically, what you can take away from this is that without Marie Curie and her husband's work, we may not today have some of the radioactive things that we have today that we actually use, radio waves and the like. But one thing you definitely need to keep in mind is that their research made possible our ability to harness a lot of these elements for not only their radioactivity, for use in weapons and technological advancements, but also medicine. Remember that we treat some very volatile diseases with radioactive treatments because radiation has the, in some forms of radiation, has the ability to combat aggressive diseases such as cancer. So without the work of Marie Curie and her husband, we may never have stumbled upon some of these elements. So this is quite significant. Now, I want to go back to Mary herself and talk a little bit more about her life outside of just her achievements, because these are, in fact, two massive achievements in and of themselves, and they both warranted her winning Nobel Prizes. Now, the birth of her two daughters, Irene and Eve, in 1897 and 1904, did not interrupt her studies. Marie was still involved intensively in scientific research. She was appointed lecturer in physics at the École Normale Supérieure for Girls in Sèvres in 1900 and introduced there a method of teaching based on experimental demonstrations. In December of 1904, she was appointed chief assistant in the laboratory directed by Pierre Curie. But despite the birth of her two beautiful daughters and the winning of her first Nobel Prize, the discovery of two elements would again suffer a critical blow in her life. On April 19th of 1906, her husband died quite suddenly. And it was a bitter blow to Marie Curie, but it was also a decisive turning point in her career. Henceforth, she would devote all her energy to completing alone the scientific work that she and her husband had undertaken. On May 13th of 1906, she was appointed to the professorship that had been left vacant on her husband's death, and she was the first woman to teach in the Sorbonne. And if you don't know what the Sorbonne is, we're going to take a brief moment to visit that. The Maison de Sorbonne was started out as a theological college. But it rapidly grew into one of the most prestigious centers of learning in Europe. The Sorbonne received official sanction in 1259 from the Pope and rapidly grew into a major European center of learning, and it became the core of the University of Paris. Now, it was founded with the aid of the king by Robert de Sorbonne, who was a French theologian. Again, Sorbonne himself was chancellor of the university from 1258 and continued to advocate widespread access to higher education and to write numerous religious tracts and commentaries. So while it did start out as a religious school, Sorbonne himself started this institution as a way to get people educated. And he was a massive proponent for widespread education of the people. And this formed the core of what would become the University of Paris. So this is yet again a massive achievement. She is the first woman to teach at this prestigious university, and which was at the time the most prestigious university, arguably in the in all of Europe. So at this time, it was the center research. It was the center of scientific development in the academic sense, in the collegiate sense. This was the place to be. This was ostensibly what we would see to be Oxford or Harvard now today. This was the place to be if you were going to be a successful academic. It was the destination that a person wanted to end up at. It was the most prestigious place a person could work at the time, and she became the first woman to teach there. Now, in 1908, she became titular professor, and in 1910, her fundamental treatise on radioactivity was published. In 1911, she was awarded the Nobel Prize for Chemistry for the isolation of pure radium. And in 1914, she saw the completion of the building of the laboratories of the Radium Institute, the Institut du Radium, at the University of Paris. So this is a woman who was incredibly driven to not only pursue her passion of science, but also to be successful. Now, throughout the First World War, Marie Curie, with the help of her daughter Irene, devoted herself to the development of the use of X-radiography. Now, in 1918, the Radium Institute, the staff of which Irene had joined, began to operate in earnest, and it was to become a universal center for nuclear physics and chemistry. Now, at this point, Marie Curie, now at the highest point of her fame, and from 1922, a member of the Academy of Medicine, devoted her researches to the study of the chemistry of radioactive substances and the medical applications of these substances. This is incredibly, incredibly impressive. But before we continue on, we are going to take a short commercial break, at which time I'd like to remind you all that we do have a proud new sponsor of Totally Driven Entertainment. He's funny, he's wacky, and he's crazy. Check out ChrisFraleyPresents.com for a good laugh. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Marie Curie's tremendous advances, and we are going to talk a little bit about her work, her fame, not only in Europe, but abroad.
Hey, everybody, this is Bay Ragney of Totally Driven Radio, and I'm here to let you know about a person you might know as one of Philly's cheesesteak kings or the TV personality, but I'm letting you know about a good friend of the show's and mine, Mr. Tony Luke Jr. He recently released his own song rendition of the Bob Dylan classic, Make You Feel My Love, which is now available on Apple Music, Spotify, and iTunes. He recorded the song for all individuals who are struggling with addiction and their families. 100% of all the proceeds that are made from this recording is going directly to fund the Brown and White Initiative. Hashtag Brown and White. To end the stigma associated with addiction. Hashtag end the stigma. Hashtag love the addict. Hashtag you are loved. Hashtag you mean something.
When the rain is blowing in your face and the whole world is on your case, I can offer you a warm embrace to make you feel my love.
I'm black man, saving man's eyes, one stereotype at a time.
To the black mobile. To the corner of Martin Luther King Street and Malcolm X Boulevard, pronto.
Will black man make it to the crime on time? Or will he be on CPT? Stay tuned at ChrisFraleyPresents.com.
Attention business owners, website owners, event promoters, or anyone looking to promote your product. The Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network is a perfect way to spread the word of your business around the world. That's right, you can advertise at our network and be played on all of our shows at rates that are so cheap, it's a no-brainer. For more information, contact Bay Ragney at bayragney@gmail.com. To keep your business driven, stay driven with Totally Driven Entertainment.
Are you a fan of Sherlock Holmes? Letters from Holmes offers unique, one-of-a-kind letters from the world-famous detective himself. Handwritten on 8.5-inch by 11-inch aged parchment paper and using smudge-free ink to produce original, high-quality letters that fans will treasure for years to come. Each letter is handcrafted and written from the perspective of Sherlock Holmes, mimicking Holmes's native tongue and embracing many of the famous detective's quirks, quips, insults, and peculiarities. Order a love letter, birthday greeting, personal correspondence, or more only at www.etsy.com/shop/lettersfromholmes.
Looking for that perfect gift for your girlfriend? Then look no further than Teddy Scares. Teddy Scares are available in a variety of styles, sizes, and prices for all your shopping needs. Teddy Scares are a mix of cute and creepy to make a great gift for almost any age. Board up your windows, lock your doors, and log on to TeddyScares.com. And be sure to become our friends at Facebook.com/TeddyScares.
Calling all comic book fans. Do you collect comics? Did you ever collect comics? Do you think your children might like reading comic books? Do you even know they still print real, paper, non-digital comic books? Well, then visit the Pirates of Ontario Street Comics in Philadelphia. We have a massive collection of comic books, action figures, trading cards, and much more. We have one of the largest stocks of back-issue comics in the area. We bag and board every new comic book at no extra charge. Our store is voted the best comic book shop in the 2013 PHL 17 Hot List Contest. Part of the movie Unbreakable is filmed in our store. We are open 7 days a week. Ontario Street Comics is located at 2235 East Ontario Street in the Port Richmond section of Philly. Our phone number is 215-288-7338. Type in the words Ontario Comics Philadelphia to check out our wacky stores page on Facebook.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. Now, before we went to break, I talked about Marie Curie's achievements and how she decided to dedicate herself to the medical application of radioactive substances. And how her daughters contributed to her research. Now, in 1921, when accompanied by her two daughters, Marie Curie made a triumphant journey to the United States, where President Warren G. Harding presented her with a gram of radium bought as the result of a collection among young American women. She gave lectures, especially in Belgium, Brazil, Spain, and Czechoslovakia. She was made a member of the International Commission on Intellectual Cooperation by the Council of the League of Nations. In addition, she had the satisfaction of seeing the development of the Curie Foundation in Paris and the inauguration in 1932 in Warsaw of the Radium Institute, of which her sister, Bronisława, became director. One of Marie Curie's outstanding achievements was to have understood the need to accumulate intense radioactive sources, not only to treat illness, but also to maintain an abundant supply for research in nuclear physics. The resultant stockpile was an unrivaled instrument until the appearance after 1930 of particle accelerators. The existence in Paris at the Radium Institute of a stock of 1.5 grams of radium, in which over a period of several years the radium D and polonium had accumulated, made a decisive contribution to the success of the experiments undertaken in the years around 1930, and in particular of those performed by Irene Curie in conjunction with Frederick Joliet, whom she had married in 1926. Prepared the way for the discovery of the neutron by Sir James Chadwick, and above all for the discovery in 1934 by Irene and Frederick Joliet Curie of artificial radioactivity. Now, a few months after her great discovery, Marie Curie died after this last discovery by her daughter as a result of leukemia. Now, this was caused by her continued exposure to radiation. Her contribution to physics had been immense, not only in her own work, the importance of which had been demonstrated by her being granted the award of 2 Nobel Prizes, but because of her influence on subsequent generations of nuclear physicists and chemists. And let's not say nothing of her contribution to the field of academia itself. And the path that she paved for women in that field. She became a prominent scholar and one of the foremost experts in radioactive theory, chemistry, as well as physics, and she became one of the foremost scholars on theory and the application of those theories in 2 fields of sciences, and paved the way for an entire new field, that field being nuclear physics and nuclear chemistry. So that speaks volumes about her tremendous contributions to the fields of physics and chemistry, because we used her work and her research technologically as a species. Marie Curie, together with Irene Joliet Curie, wrote the entry on radium for the 13th edition, which came out in 1926, of the Encyclopedia Britannica. In 1995, her ashes were enshrined in the Pantheon of Paris, as I mentioned before, and she is the first woman to receive this honor for her own achievements. Her office and laboratory in the Curie Pavilion of the Radium Institute are preserved as the Curie Museum to this day. Now, guys, before, you know, I didn't think we'd get to so much so quickly, so I do want to go back and look directly at some of research and give you guys a better understanding of what she was involved in while she was alive, and some of her competition as well. So before her death, during the period in which she had discovered the new elements, she had developed an innovative technique to investigate samples. 15 years earlier, her husband and his brother had developed a version of the electrometer, which was a sensitive device for measuring electric charges. Using her husband's electrometer, she discovered that uranium rays caused the air around a sample to conduct electricity. Now, using this technique, her first result was the finding that the activity of the uranium compounds depended only on the quantity of the amount of uranium present. She theorized and hypothesized that the radiation was not the outcome of some interaction of molecules, but must come from the atom itself. This hypothesis was an important step in disproving the ancient assumption that atoms were indivisible. Now, the Curies did not have a dedicated laboratory. Most of their research was carried out in a converted shed next to the School of Physics and Chemistry. The shed, formerly a medical school dissecting room, was poorly ventilated and was not even waterproof. So for the majority of her research in the 1890s, she was doing her research in a very poorly ventilated, not Loctite shed. They were unaware at the time of the deleterious effects of radiation exposure. So at the time, they were not aware that radiation had debilitating effects on the human body. Attendant on their continued unprotected work with radioactive substances. So at the time, the Curies didn't realize that radioactive substances could do harm to the body. And the school did not sponsor her research at the time, but she would receive subsidies from metallurgical and mining companies and various organizations and governments. So Marie Curie's early work was not funded by the university she was working for. Her systematic studies included two uranium minerals, pitchblende and tobernite, also known as chalcolite. Her electrometer showed that pitchblende was four times as active as uranium itself, and chalcolite twice as active. She concluded that if earlier results relating the quantity of uranium to its activity were correct, then these two minerals must contain small quantities of another substance that was far more active than uranium, at which point she began, she discovered radium as well as polonium. Now, her husband at the time was still alive. He and his wife became increasingly invested in this research, and Pierre became so intrigued by his wife's research that he dropped his work completely to join her. She was acutely aware of the importance of promptly publishing her discoveries and thus establishing her priority. Had not Becquerel 2 years earlier presented his discovery to the Académie des the Academy of Sciences the day after he made it, credit for the discovery of radioactivity and even a Nobel Prize would have instead gone to Sylvanus Thompson. But Curie chose the same rapid means of publication. The paper giving a brief and simple account of her work was presented for her to the Academy on April 12th of 1898 by her former professor, Gabriel Lippmann. And even so, just as Thompson had been beaten by Becquerel, so Curie was beaten in the race to tell of her discovery that thorium gives off rays in the same way as uranium 2 months earlier by Gerhard Karl Schmidt, who had published his own finding in Berlin. Now, at that time, no one else in the world of physics had noticed what Curie recorded in a sentence of her paper describing how much greater were the activities of pitchblende and chalcolite than uranium itself. The fact is very remarkable and leads to the belief that these minerals may contain an element which is much more active than uranium. She later would recall how she felt a passionate desire to verify this as rapidly as possible. Now, on the 14th of April in 1898, she and her family optimistically weighed out a 100-gram sample of pitchblende and ground it with a pestle and mortar. They did not realize at the time that what they were researching for was present in such minute quantities that they would eventually have to process tons of the ore to find it. Now, in 1898, Mary and her husband published a joint paper announcing the existence of an element which they named polonium in honor of Poland, which were for another 20 years remained partitioned among three empires, Russia, Austria, and Prussia. They also, in December of the same year, announced the existence of radium. In the course of their research, they also coined the word radioactivity. It's all about patenting, people, and all about naming. Remember, guys, that's the way it's done. So I'm giving you guys some more specifics here about this to give you guys a little bit of a better understanding, because I don't want to just tell you that Marie Curie was great. I want to show you that she was great. Now, Mary was not satisfied with just discovering two elements and proving the existence of radioactivity. To prove the discovery beyond any doubt, the Curie sought to isolate polonium and radium in a pure form. Pitchblende is a complex mineral. The chemical separation of its constituent was an arduous task. The discovery of polonium had been relatively easy. Chemically, it resembles the element bismuth, and polonium was the only bismuth-like substance in the ore. Radium was a bit more elusive, and it closely related barium, and pitchblende contains both elements. By 1898, the Curies had obtained traces of radium, but appreciable quantities uncontaminated with barium were still beyond reach. They undertook the arduous task of separating out radium salt by differential crystallization. From a ton of pitchblende, 1/10 of a gram of radium chloride was separated in 1902, and in 1910, she isolated pure radium metal. She never succeeded in isolating polonium, which has a half-life of only 138 days, however. Between 1898 and 1904, the Curies published jointly or separately a total of 32 scientific papers, including one that announced that when exposed to radium, diseased tumor-forming cells were destroyed faster than healthy cells. And there you have it, guys. You get the discovery that radiation can be used to treat diseased tumor-forming cells in 1902. I mentioned that Curie became the first faculty member at the university she was at. In December of 1903, the Royal Swedish Academy of Sciences awarded Pierre and Marie Curie and Henri Becquerel the Nobel Prize in Physics, and it was for in recognition of the extraordinary services they have rendered by their joint researches on the radiation phenomena discovered by Professor Henri Becquerel. At first, the committee had intended to only honor Pierre and Henri, but a committee member and advocate for women scientists, Swedish mathematician Magnus Goesta Mittag-Leffler, alerted Pierre to the situation, and after his complaint, Marie's name was to the nomination. She was the first woman to be awarded a Nobel Prize as a result. Curie and her husband declined to go to Stockholm to receive the prize in person because they were too busy with their work, and Pierre Curie, who disliked public ceremonies, was feeling increasingly ill. As Nobel laureates were required to deliver a lecture, the Curies finally undertook the trip in 1905. The award money allowed them to hire their first laboratory assistant. Now, following the award of the prize, and galvanized by an offer from the University of Geneva, which offered Pierre Curie a position, the University of Paris gave him a professorship and the chair of physics, although the Curies did not have a proper laboratory. Upon Pierre Curie's complaint, the university relented and agreed to furnish a new lab, but it would not be ready until 1906. Now, I mentioned before that Pierre was killed suddenly. More specifically, he was killed in a road accident. As he was walking across the Rue Dauphine in heavy rain, he was struck by a horse-drawn vehicle, and he fell under its wheels, and he died of a skull fracture. Curie was devastated for her husband, and on the 13th of May in 1906, the physics department of the University of Paris decided to retain the chair that had been created for her late husband and offer it to her. She accepted, hoping to create a world-class laboratory as a tribute to her husband, and she became, in that moment, the first professor at the University of Paris. And she did not give up on this dream. Eventually, as I mentioned, she managed to create this laboratory. And not only did she create the Curie Institute and the Radium Institute, but the Pasteur Institute, and the initiative for creating this institute in 1909 from Pierre Powell, Emile Rowe, director of the Pasteur, had been disappointed that the University of Paris was not giving Curie a proper lab and suggested that she move to his institute. Only then, with the threat of her leaving, did the University of Paris relent, and eventually the Curie Pavilion became a joint initiative of both institutions. Now, as I mentioned, during the First World War, Curie recognized that wounded soldiers were best served if operated on as soon as possible. She saw a need for field radiological centers near the front lines to assist battlefield surgeons. And after a quick study of radiology, anatomy, and automotive mechanics, she procured X-ray equipment, vehicles, auxiliary generators, and developed mobile radiography units, which came to be popularly known as Petite Curies or Little Curies. She became the director of the Red Cross Radiology Service and set up France's first military radiology center, operational by late 1914. Assisted at first by a military doctor and by her 17-year-old daughter Irene, Curie directed the installation of 20 mobile radiological vehicles and another 200 radiological units as field hospitals in the first year of the war. Later, she began training other women as aides. She produced hollow needles containing radium emanation, a colorless radioactive gas given off by radium, later identified as radon to be used for sterilizing infected tissue. She provided the radium from her own 1 gram supply, and it is estimated that over 1 million wounded soldiers were treated with her X-ray units. Busy with this work, she carried out very little scientific research during that period. In spite of all her humanitarian contributions to the French war effort, she never received any formal recognition of it from the French government. Also, promptly after the war started, she attempted to donate her gold Nobel Prize medals to the war effort, but the French National Bank refused to accept them. She did, however, buy war bonds using her Nobel Prize money. And she said, "I'm not going to give up the little gold I possess. I shall add to this the scientific medals, which are quite useless to me." Or she says, "I am going to give up the little gold I possess and add to this the scientific medals, which are quite useless to me. There is something else. By sheer laziness, I had allowed the money for my second Nobel Prize to remain in Stockholm in Swedish crowns. This is the chief part of what we possess. I should like to bring it back here and invest it in war loans. The state needs it. Only I have no illusions. This money will probably be lost." She was also an active member in committees of Polonia and France dedicated to the Polish cause, and after the war, she summarized her wartime experiences in a book, Radiology and War, which was published in 1919. Now, for the 25th anniversary of the discovery of radium, the French government established a stipend for her. Its previous recipient was Louis Pasteur, and in 1921, she was welcomed triumphantly when she toured the U.S. to raise funds for research on radium. Mrs. William Brown Melanie, after interviewing Curie, created a Marie Curie Radium Fund and raised money to buy radium, publicizing her trip. I mentioned her discussion with the president, who presented her with 1 gram of radium collected in the U.S. Led by Curie, the Institute produced 4 Nobel Prize winners, including her daughter, Irene Joliette Curie, and her son-in-law, Frederick Joliette Curie. Eventually, it became one of 4 major radioactivity research laboratories, the others being the Cavendish Laboratory with Ernest Rutherford, the Institute for Radium Research in Vienna with Stefan Mayer, and the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Chemistry with Otto Hahn and Lisa Meitner. In August of 1922, Marie Curie became a member of the newly created International Committee on Intellectual Cooperation, which I have already mentioned. And she went on a second American tour in 1929, succeeding in equipping the Warsaw Radium Institute with radium, which was later opened in 1932, where her sister became the director. She was also elected a member of the International Atomic Weights Committee, where she served until her death from 1930 until she died in 1934. She would die at Saint-Salamos Sanatorium in Passy, House Savoy, from aplastic anemia believed to have been contracted from her long-term exposure to radiation. And before we wrap up, I want to talk about her legacy. The physical and societal aspects of the Curie's work contributed substantially to the shaping of the world of the 20th and 21st centuries. One professor from the University of Cornell, L. Pierce Williams, observes, in his own writing, Curie, Pierre, and Marie, and this is with the Encyclopedia Americana, the result of the Curie's work was epoch-making. Radium's radioactivity was so great that it could not be ignored. It seemed to contradict the principle of the conservation of energy and therefore forced a reconsideration of the foundations of physics. On the experimental level, the discovery of radium provided men like Ernest Rutherford with sources of radioactivity with which they could probe the structure of the atom. As a result of Rutherford's experiments with alpha radiation, the nuclear atom was first postulated. In medicine, the radioactivity of radium appeared to offer a means by which cancer could be successfully attacked for the first time. If the Curie's work helped overturn established ideas in physics and chemistry, it has had an equally profound effect in the societal sphere. To attain her scientific achievements, Marie Curie had to overcome barriers in both her native and adoptive country that were placed in her way because she was a woman. This aspect of her life and career is highlighted in Francois Girard's Marie Curie, Curie A Life, which emphasizes her role as a feminist precursor. She was known for her honesty and moderate lifestyle. Having received a small scholarship in 1893, she returned it in 1897 as soon as she began earning her keep. She gave much of her first Nobel Prize money to friends, family, students, and research associates to propel them on their careers. In an unusual decision, Curie intentionally refrained from patenting the radium isolation process so that the scientific community could do unhindered research. She insisted that monetary gifts and awards be given to the scientific institution she was affiliated with rather than to herself. And she and her husband often refused rewards, awards and medals. Albert Einstein reportedly remarked that she was probably the only person who could not be corrupted by fame. As one of the most famous women scientists to date, Marie Curie has become an icon in the scientific world and has received tributes from across the globe, even in the realm of popular culture. In a 2009 poll carried out by New Scientist, she was voted the most inspirational woman in science. She received 25.1% of all votes cast, nearly twice as many as the second place Rosalind Franklin. Poland and France declared in 2011 that it was the year of Marie Curie, and the United Nations declared that this would be the International Year of Chemistry. An artistic installation celebrating Madame Curie filled the Jacobs Gallery at San Diego's Museum of Contemporary Art. On November 7th, Google celebrated the anniversary of her birth with a special Google Doodle. On December 10th of the same year, the New York Academy of Sciences celebrated the centenary of Marie Curie's second Nobel Prize in the presence of Princess Madeleine of Sweden. Marie Curie is the first woman to not only win a Nobel Prize, she's the first person to win it twice and the only woman to win it in two fields. The only person to win in multiple sciences. These are the other awards that she received across her lifetime. In addition to a Nobel Prize in Physics and a Nobel Prize in Chemistry, which she won in 1903 and 1911, respectively, she won the Davy Medal with her husband in 1903, the Matucci Medal in 1904 with her husband, the Actonian Prize in 1907, the Elliott Cresson Medal in 1909, and the Franklin Medal of the American Philosophical Society in 1921. Her publication with her husband and their collaborator for their discovery of radium and polonium was honored by a citation for the Chemical Breakthrough Award from the Division of the History of Chemistry of the American Chemical Society presented to the ESPCI Paris, the École les Supérieures de Physique et de Chimie Industrielles de Via de Paris in 2015. In 1995, she became the first woman again entombed on her own merits in the Pantheon of Paris. The Curie symbol CI, a unit of radioactivity, is named in honor of her and Pierre Curie, although the Common Commission which agreed on the name, never clearly stated whether the standard was named after Pierre, Marie, or both of them. She received numerous honorary degrees from universities across the world. The Marie Sklodowsky Curie Actions Fellowship Program of the European Union for Young Scientists wishing to work in a foreign country is named for her. In Poland, she had received honorary doctorates from the Lekow Polytechnic, the Poznan University, both in 1912 and 1922, respectively, Krakow's University in 1924, and the Warsaw Polytechnic University in 1926. In 1921, in the U.S., she was awarded membership to the Iota Sigma Pi Women Scientist Society. Her name is included on the monument to the X-ray and radium martyrs of all nations erected in Hamburg, Germany in 1936. Numerous locations around the world are named after her. In 2007, a metro station in Paris was renamed to honor both of the Curies. Polish nuclear research reactor Maria is named after her, and the 7,000 Curie asteroid is also named for her. KLM McDonnell Douglas MD-11 registration is named for her honor. Several institutions bear her name, starting with the two Curie Institutes, the Maria Sklodowsky Curie Institute of Oncology in Warsaw, the Institute Curie in Paris. She is the patron of Marie Curie Sklodowsky University in Lublin, founded in 1944, and of Pierre and Marie Curie University in Paris, France's preeminent scientific university. In Britain, Marie Curie Cancer Care was organized in 1948 to care for the terminally ill. There are two museums devoted directly to her. In 1967, the Maria Sklodowsky Curie Museum was established in Warsaw's Newtown at her birthplace on Freda Street. Her Paris laboratory is preserved as the Musée Curie and has been open since 19. Several works of art bear her likeness. In 1935, Mieszkalina Mosiska, wife of Polish President Ignacy Mosiska, unveiled a statue of her before Warsaw's Radium Institute, and during the 1944 Second World War Warsaw uprising against the Nazi occupation, the monument was damaged by gunfire. After the war, it was decided to leave the bullet marks on the statue and its pedestal. In 1955, Joseph Mazur created a stained glass panel of her. The Maria Sklodowsky Curie medallion featured in the University at Buffalo Polish Room. There are a number of biographies dedicated to her. In 1938, her daughter Eve Curie published Madame Curie. In 1987, Francois Girard wrote Marie Curie, A Life. In 2005, Barbara Goldsmith wrote Obsessive Genius, The Inner World of Marie Curie. And in 2011, Lauren Redness published Radioactive, Marie and Pierre Curie, A Tale of Love and the Fallout. She was part of a Oscar-nominated film, Madame Curie, based on her life in 1943. And more recently, in 1997, a French film about her and her husband was released, Les Palmes de M. Schutz. It was adapted from a play of the same name, and in the film, she was played by Isabel Huppert. So, ultimately, what we can gather is that not only was Marie Curie a woman who contributed a great, great deal to the field of chemistry and the field of physics, but she had a tremendous impact on the academic world, on the scientific world, and on society. She proved that if you put in the time, you put in the effort, and you put in the hard work, you can achieve great down the doors, kicked in the gates, and threw down every wall placed in front of her to become not only a two-time Nobel Prize winner in two different subjects, but to become arguably the most decorated scientist who ever walked the face of the earth. She has been credited with laying the foundations for two of the most prominent fields of scientific study that we have today. And her contributions continue to inspire, to influence, and shape the world around us to this very day. I hope you guys have enjoyed learning a little bit about this tremendous individual. And I want to give you guys some places to look. Obviously, I rattled off a lot of the biographies. I do want to recommend that you read a few of these. Some of these are really well done. For starters, I would recommend Francois Girard's Marie Curie, A Life, and also Madame Curie, by her, the biography done by her daughter. Both of these are tremendous sources. I recommend that you take a look. At those, do take a look at this great article done on her in the Smithsonian Magazine, Madame Curie's Passion. I would also recommend that you take a look at Naomi Passeroff's Marie Curie and the Science of Radioactivity, published with the Oxford University Press. There's also a great documentary done with the BBC. It's called The Genius of Mary Curie, The Woman Who Lit Up the World. I think it's definitely something you'll want to take a look at, definitely worth the watch. And lastly, I do want to recommend you take a look at Barbara Goldsmith's Obsessive Genius, The Inner World of Mary Curie. Guys, that's all I've got for you. I hope you enjoyed learning a little something today, and I hope that motivates you, and I hope it inspires you. Because if there's one thing I think we can definitely take away from Marie Curie, other than the fact that she was a tremendous trailblazer and a absolute genius for the time in which she was alive, who may be one of the most impactful people to ever walk the planet, I think the one thing that Marie Curie would leave behind for all of us to take away from her is to find your inspiration and to chase it down with everything that you've got. So I think that's where we'll leave off today. Find what inspires you and chase it down with everything you've got. Do not be denied, and you will be pleasantly surprised at what you can achieve, even if you fall short of the goal. That's all I've got for you guys today. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you all next time. Take care.